Talking Sports with Nick Jenkinson. It's Monday, and you know what that means. It's time for Talking Sports with Nick Jenkinson on the South Central Indiana News Network. On tonight's show, we will talk with retired City of Bloomington Parks Director Mick Renneisen about the national softball tournaments coming to Bloomington later this month. We will talk IU, men and women's basketball, and a whole lot more. So let's talk sports. We will start with IU women's basketball, adding grad transfer Caitlin Hose to the program. Hose comes to IU from Georgia, where she played 60 games and made 13 starts in her three-year career. She is a 5'10 guard from Hazel Green, Alabama. She led her high school to the 6A state championship game all 4 years, and they won the state title her senior season. She will have two more years here at IU, and she adds depth to a team that lost six girls in the offseason, five to transfer, and one going back to her native country to play professional basketball. IU men's basketball will host St. John's in the sixth annual Gavitt Tip-Off Games matchup, which puts the Big Ten against the Big East in mid-November each season. This will be the eighth time these two schools have met, which began in 1952. St. John's makes its third trip to Bloomington. They beat IU back on February 1st, 1952, 65-55. The Hoosiers won December 23rd, 1992, 105-80. And the last matchup between these two came November 24th, 2016, when IU won 83-73. It was also announced that the Hoosiers will play Syracuse on November 30th in the annual Big Ten ACC Challenge matchup. This will be the second time that the Hoosiers have gone to Syracuse. The last meeting was December 3rd, 2013, when the Orange beat the Hoosiers 69-52. Syracuse leads the all-time series 5-1, but the only matchup that Indiana has won came March 30th, 1987, when Keith Smart hit the game-winning shot to beat the Orange 74-73 in the NCAA championship. The NCAA has announced that all student athletes can now profit from their name, image, and likeness in college sports. This has been an ongoing debate for years with the NCAA and student athletes being able to make money, but the policy now clears the way for all student athletes in all sports to profit off their name, image, and likeness. It is a long overdue process for college athletes to finally make money. That is a look at our top stories. When we come back, we will talk with former City of Bloomington Parks Director and Deputy Mayor Mick Renneisen about the national softball tournaments coming to town. This is Talking Sports with Nick Jenkinson on the South Central Indiana News Network.
When you're preparing to buy a new home, the last thing you should have to worry about is the safety of your possessions. Allow Big Boys Moving to professionally oversee the transport of your precious belongings. Big Boys Moving is locally owned with years of experience. Whether your relocation is local or long distance, allow Big Boys to move you with an attitude of gratitude. Call today, 812-947-1479 or online at bbmoving812.com.
This is Danny with Weathervane Insurance Solutions. Not only is it especially important for our economy to support local businesses these days, but as your local independent insurance agency, Weathervane Insurance can shop you around with dozens of carriers to ensure you receive the most competitive price and, of course, the best customer service. Find us on the web at weathervaneonline.com. That's weathervaneonline.com.
Hi, this is head coach Eric Anderson of the Indiana Cutters semi-pro football team, and I listen to Talking Sports with Nick Jenkinson on the South Central Indiana News Network.
Welcome back to Talking Sports with Nick Jenkinson on the South Central Indiana News Network. It is time to welcome in my guest, the former director of the Bloomington City Parks Department, former deputy mayor, the now retired Mick Renneisen is my guest. Mick, first of all, congratulations on retirement. Thanks for joining me. Pleasure to have you.
Yeah, happy to do so. Retirement is a good thing. I've enjoyed it in my 2 months so far, and a lot of our stories that we're going to talk about today in the sports side of my life date back to the very beginning of my work career here in Bloomington. So I'm looking forward to the chance to share some of those stories.
Well, we've got two national softball tournaments coming up here, July 30th and August the 1st at Twin Lakes and Winslow Sports Parks. The girls Class B fast pitch 12 and under Northern Nationals, and then the girls B fast pitch 18 and under Northern Nationals. The 31st and 32nd time that Bloomington has hosted these national softball tournaments. You got to be a part of these for years. I'm sure that this is just a great feeling, especially after not being able to host last year due to the pandemic.
It was a very surreal year to not have events of any kind, softball or other sport events in our community. And I'd really like to kind of rewind to the impetus for having national softball tournaments in Bloomington by telling a story of my very first year as a Parks Department employee in 1981. And that's when I was mainly responsible, when I was hired in April, for running our adult softball leagues. And then in the winter, basketball, volleyball, and other adult tennis lessons and things of that nature, tennis tournaments. And it was apparent to me pretty quickly that adult softball in Bloomington was a big deal in the 80s. I had played a little bit as a student at IU on an adult softball team. I was recruited by just going out to Bryant Park and hitting and pitching and catching with some of my college roommates, and a group of older guys were practicing that day, and they said, hey, we could use some outfielders. You guys look pretty fast. Would you like to play on our softball team? And that was in the late 70s, 78 and 79. A couple of years later, I was running the very league that I was participating in, and there were 105 teams playing on three fields. Lower Cascades had two fields. Upper Cascades had one. That's now a skate park, and Lower Cascades is a youth park because the fence distances were too short as technology improved over the years. And we had a waiting list of teams. Could only play on one team, and that was it. So a very strong and growing softball program. So it wasn't too many years into that job in the Parks Department where I realized we needed more fields. It took a while to acquire the property, get the funding mechanisms aligned. By 1991, we were under construction. 92, we opened. 93, we had our first national softball tournament. And the other part of what started when I began my job as the sports coordinator for Bloomington Parks in the 80s was an affiliation with a group called the Amateur Softball Association. It's the largest amateur governing body. It is the governing body of the sport of softball. You can see on my hat, I have a USA Softball hat on. We later became USA Softball. And that's much like USA Basketball or USA Hockey or any of the other USA brand. That's the big deal. That is the governing body of the sport of softball. So that affiliation allowed us to start bidding on softball tournaments, but we didn't have the facilities until Twin Lakes was built. And that didn't occur till 93 that we had that first adult women's Class C slow pitch tournament, which people would be stunned to hear in the early 90s. There were 73 teams that traveled from all over the country to play in our national tournament in Bloomington in September. But the bidding process is fascinating for these events. And I don't know what it's like for all the other associations that award their events, but it's kind of like the NCAA tournament where basketball, where you have to put in that you're interested in having that event to the national governing body. There were 280 voting members that convene every November in some city across the country. Over 1,000 people attended a national softball conference, if you can imagine that. And these 280 voting members hear presentations from cities interested in hosting events 2 years in advance. So we were bidding in 91 for an event in 93. Twin Lakes hadn't even been built yet, but we had all the drawings and said, this is what we're going to build. We had a good reputation for being a strong ASA city with a lot of local support. So we won one of our first bids. We did win our first bid for that Women's C class event. Fast forward to almost 30 years later, not quite, but almost 30 years later. And we've had our 32nd and 33rd nationals, because some years we've had two, as we have this year. We've estimated that we've contributed about $25 million to the Bloomington economy as a result of these teams traveling in, spending nights in hotel rooms, going out to eat at our local eating establishments, spending money on gas, groceries, retail, and of course, the money they spend at the actual venue. Some of the events, 3 or 4 days long, some events an entire week, some events 20 or 30 teams. The biggest we ever had had 116 teams in it. And that was the maximum we really could ever have here based on the number of fields we have. So it's really run the gamut. It's been a great economic impact driver for our community. It's filled hotel rooms in the summer when the students are gone and there's no IU athletics to fill the hotel rooms. And the facility cost $2 million to build in 92. I think it's paid for itself many times over.
The one thing that I, of course, have noticed, I have been to some of these softball tournaments, of course, to follow local softball players that get to play in these tournaments, but also get to meet parents and kids from other states and other places. And they're always impressed with just how Bloomington is set up, how easy it is to get around, just how nice it is. So what do you do to sell Bloomington to the National Softball Committee to get these tournaments year in and year out?
Yeah, that's a great question because facilities alone don't do it. I mean, by now, with a facility that's nearly 30 years old, we have many, many facilities across the country that have been built new that would say they're better than us, more current in some standards, got more amenities, and they would be correct. Why do we still get nationals? This is an interesting fact. 2/3 of the population of the country is within an 8-hour drive of Bloomington. So when you think of that, it makes it pretty readily accessible for people to get here from in an 8-hour, you know, a 1-day drive, because most of the population density is east of the Mississippi River. That's why that statistic stands out as an attraction for us. We're not, despite the fact that we think it's an expensive community to live in, it's not an expensive community to visit when you compare yourselves to some of the high end places that tournaments are held. There are many tournaments held in California. We all know the cost of going to California, traveling wise and staying there, is much greater than in Indiana. And then I would finally say that Hoosier hospitality is real. People come here and they're just amazed by how nice people are. Well, that counts for something because the teams evaluate the site, and an independent USA softball representative and umpire in chief are sent in from another spot, another location in the country. They evaluate the site and they walk away with the same impression. And we've had 30 different people in each of those positions come here over the years. And they all tell the same story. The people are so nice. You guys make it really easy for us to get around. You take care of all of our food and beverage, make sure that the umpires are, you know, properly hydrated, and we take care of people. And I think that goes a long way for allowing us to continue to get these events when our facility has aged, but all those other positive attributes continue to remain.
When you're in charge of a tournament or tournaments like this, it's a 2-day, all day, all night type of thing. So how do you keep yourself going when, say, 12 to 14 to 15 hour day for 3 days straight?
Yeah, I would be thrilled if it were just that long, 12, 13 hour days. But most events for event planners actually start months in advance. The planning goes into it. And then when the event comes, the days are more like 20 hour days because you're there, you're the first one there before everybody gets there, and you're the last one to leave after the last games are played. If there's inclement weather, which we quite frankly face here a lot in the summer with the thunderstorms that pop up, then it just extends your day. You have to get so many games in to stay on schedule. And as soon as the weather interrupts that, then you're immediately redoing all the work you just did on the bracket and trying to communicate to all the teams. Now, there's great technology now that allows us to do that a lot easier than in the early days, in the early 90s, when we did not have all the technology we have. But nonetheless, they're full days, not just for the tournament director, but for everybody involved, including the teams, because their day's disrupted. Whatever they thought they were going to do when there's inclement weather, now they're kind of on call for, well, you might play at 2, you might play at 4, and then you don't know because you have to go to the winners or losers bracket, and you're not going to know that till you play that game, as we all know from double eliminations format. So it's just a long day. The longest ones are those ones that go all week long. Quite frankly, you lose track of days. You just know every day there's less and less teams, and you know eventually there's going to be 2 left and then 1. So that's when you know you're getting down to the end. But in the middle of the week, it can feel like it's forever before you're going to get to the finish line.
Is there a tournament that has stood out to you over the years, or do they all just kind of seem the same?
No, there's definitely some things that stood out. I'd say the second tournament we had here was the unique thing. That was our 94 men's class D slow pitch. That had three teams in it, which was pretty big for us because, remember, we don't have adult-sized diamonds at Winslow. That's a youth-sized park. So when we have youth events, we can use 8 or 10 diamonds, counting Lower Cascades, 4 at Twin Lakes, 4 at Winslow, and 2 at Lower Cascades. When we have an adult event, we just had the 4 adult-sized at Twin Lakes. So we had 100-plus teams is a really big stretch for us. But what was really cool about the event to start with, there was a team from Alaska that came. And the Alaskan team called me in advance and said, hey, we'd like to have a cookout and we're going to bring all the fresh fish from Alaska. Some of us are fishermen and we'd like to bring the food down. Can you set it up so we can grill all this food? And we're just going to give it to all the teams. We want everybody to come and we want to be the host of this great big fish fry. It wasn't a fry. They cooked it entirely different. And I'm like, well, that's really cool. You would do that. Oh yeah. We love doing that stuff. So we actually created an event around what those guys wanted to do from Alaska. They brought like 700 pounds of, you know, salmon and just great fish from Alaskan waters. I think we ate about half of it with the teams that showed up. The other half we donated to the food bank. So it was just such a win-win situation. That was very unique. They offered to do that and were generous enough to bring that food down. When we started bidding on youth national tournaments, that's a different animal entirely. Now you've got, you know, way more crowds, way more teams. The format's different. You have pool play that feeds into double elimination bracket. The 16 and under national we had right around the year 2000 or so was the biggest one we had at 116 teams. And just the logistics of that many teams and that many fans that came in and the amount of souvenir sales we had to prepare for and food and beverage options and practice fields, the demands on that and college coaches that had come in to watch these athletes play. They were recruitable athletes at that age. That was the biggest undertaking for a lot of reasons. And also the most diverse group of people we recruited. There was a great story from that event too, from a parent. I always ask parents when I'm sitting around the bleachers, you know, does your daughter or son, mostly this was daughters playing girls fast pitch, but every once in a while there'd be an adult tournament that there'd be a younger person in, you know, how much does your daughter, let's just say in this case, enjoy the sport, or is this just something that, you know, you really want them to do? Are you looking for a scholarship? And one dad from California said, you know, that's a fair question. I've done the math. I could have paid for a college scholarship with all of the travel money that we've spent on her all these years and all the training and, you know, AAU type events we've had to attend like this one. She loved it. So I was fine with it. She'd have never got a scholarship anywhere, I'd have been fine with it because she really loved to play the sport. I thought that was refreshing. So many times you see parents that are just trying to drive their kid to get a scholarship and they never do the math. It's like, you could have paid for the scholarship. Now, are you really forcing your kid to play a sport every weekend? This is a big commitment for these girls. They're playing somewhere every weekend. They're training year round. It's pretty much you play one sport and one sport only if you're trying to be a college athlete. So I don't like that mindset. It's my mindset is they ought to really be more diversified and experience a lot of different things. And good athletes are going to get scholarships to whatever sport they're good at. So that's just a little side note about it. But that dad was very forthcoming and I thought had a really good attitude about it.
And you talk about the travel that's involved. I mean, like you said, these kids are traveling and not just 50 miles down the road. Some of these kids are playing in different states almost every weekend.
Right. We've had teams come with, you know, fully decked out multi-hundred thousands of dollars buses with their team name on it. So, you know, that's the one extreme. And then you've got the teams that fly in from, well, of course, California is sort of the hotbed of softball in the country. It wouldn't be uncommon for us in one of those big girls nationals to have 20 teams from California. So they're flying across the country. That's not cheap. And they're staying in hotels 7 or 8 days. That's not cheap. And, you know, they got to feed the girls and the coaches and parents come along. It's an expensive proposition to be a travel ball athlete at any level. But when you have the additional travel distance and the number of places these kids play over the course of a summer, in this case for softball, I can't imagine how much money some of them spent. This dad said he spent probably $40,000 over the course of his daughter's career.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more with Mick Renneisen after this quick timeout. This is Talking Sports with Nick Jenkinson on the South Central Indiana News Network.
Are you spending more time at home these days? If so, then you'll want to consider having your carpets professionally cleaned. Brothers Carpet Cleaning has been the region's premier cleaner for nearly a decade. Their truck-mounted systems are the most effective to remove bacteria, allergens, and pet dander. Brothers Carpet Cleaning will professionally clean your carpet, tile, upholstery, and wood. When it has to be clean, call Brothers Carpet Cleaning. Online at carpetcleaningbrothers.com.
Are you concerned about your life insurance coverage during these uncertain times in history? I'm Adam Beasley with American Senior Benefits right here in Bloomington, and we can help you find the best coverage for you and your family. We work for you to find the best plan out of more than 150 companies. We can compare your existing coverage or start a brand new plan. From newborn to 89 years old, from term to permanent, we'll find what's best for you. Call us at American Senior Benefits, 812-631-2305.
Welcome back to Talking Sports with Nick Jenkinson on the South Central Indiana News Network. My guest, Mick Raneisen, former director of the Bloomington City Parks Department. Mick, we're of course talking about all the softball tournaments that were in town. These teams, of course, always come in the day or two before because there's always a manager's meeting and then usually an opening ceremony, usually held at Assembly Hall or the Convention Center. That has to be, of course, a big drawing card for everybody that comes here to Bloomington.
It really is, Nick. No matter what, where you come from in the country, even if you're not a big basketball fan, you've heard of Assembly Hall. And in the earlier days, and even today, people associate Indiana with Bob Knight. And that was the case when we were bidding on nationals in the 80s and 90s. They would always go, "Oh, you're from Bloomington, Bob Knight." You know, that was like just synonymous with Bloomington, which was kind of a great thing for us because they immediately knew who we were and where we were and that we were a Big Ten university community. So I don't think it was in the first several years, those adult tournaments, we would have the opening ceremonies on the fields. But when we started getting the girls fast pitch tournaments, we thought, well, wouldn't it be cool to have a venue on campus and show the girls and their parents campus? That's a win for the university as well. It's kind of giving them a chance to expose their beautiful campus. I mean, rated one of the most beautiful campuses in the country by anybody that knows anything about college institutions. And we always get these great stories from the parents about, wow, what a beautiful campus you have and facility that you have in Bloomington. So we've taken them to the soccer stadium numerous times for opening ceremonies. We took them to Assembly Hall the most, and that's the one that's most memorable because when people step in there, it's just such a unique venue. We take it for granted here because we're in it all the time. But people who come from somewhere else, you know, they're just awed by the 17,000 seats and the nature of how it's shaped. And they just can't imagine anybody playing basketball in there with that crescendo of activity. So having them on the floor, having opening ceremonies where they walk down the 10-second line, parents on one side, kids coming from the other side, all lined up. It's quite a visual. And I know every parent that's had the opportunity to have their girls go through that really appreciates that. And we're thankful the university was so cooperative to allow us to do that.
Now, one of your many other jobs that you've had is you've been part of the stat crew for IU football and men's basketball, and you've also got to work the Maui Invitational for several years. With all the off-season news that IU basketball has had, I am sure that you're excited to see Mike Woodson return as a head coach.
You know, I really was. I think at first when I heard about it, I was one of those, let's see here. That's interesting. I didn't see that coming, right? There's always rumors about which former IU player might be our next coach. That's been the case ever since Coach Knight was let go. And always there was rumors about, well, it's Steve Alford or, you know, maybe Calbert Chaney or Dane Fife's name has come up in the past, but it never happened. There was no former IU player that was named our basketball coach. And the second thought that came to my mind was, well, I was in college when Woody was in college. He graduated 1 year after I did. And I was not trying to be ageist, but I'm like, wow, he's kind of up there in years. And then I realized quickly that, you know, Coach Krzyzewski, Jim Boeheim, there's a bunch of coaches in there coaching in their 70s. And at the moment in time, I think it's the right call. I'm really thrilled that Mike's going to come back here. And I know the kids that want to play at the next level are going to love that he's been an NBA coach and player and former IU player. He's got a passion for the university and for IU basketball specifically. All the things that he's done so far have just been, to me, home runs. The staff he's put together, that Scott Dolson was able to pull Mike and Thad Mata together in to, you know, kind of make up for some of the things that people perceive Mike wouldn't have, which is, of course, that college level experience of recruiting and managing all of the various roster things that now go along with the challenges of the transfer portal and all that are unique too. And I just think that what a wonderful team has been assembled. Keeping our best players, getting them to come back after a bunch of them entered the portal was huge. Getting a five-star in Tamar Bates off the bat like that, getting Miller Kopp, a valuable shooter that's played in the Big Ten. I mean, he's just, to me, he's been doing nothing but hitting home runs. And I think like everybody else, like we all can't wait to see the product on the floor this year.
Over the years that you've been a part of IU basketball, I'm sure there are many moments that stand out to you. What is your favorite moment that you can think of?
Well, you know, the watch shot's pretty special for tons of reasons. First of all, anytime Indiana beats Kentucky, it's a big thing, and it always will be. And I hope that series resumes like it should be. It should never be discontinued. It should always be part of the college basketball landscape, and I hope it'll get back to that. I know Woody will absolutely want to play against Kentucky like he did when he was here as a player. So the watch shot was big. There were many games in the Damon Bailey era that I thought were big games because, you know, we were consistently competing. That was Calvert and Alan Henderson. That team was one injury Alan Henderson away from winning another championship along the way. And so many of those games between Ohio State and Jimmy Jackson in that era were just phenomenal games that were played. And then that's the era when everybody stayed 4 years, right? We didn't have, you know, well, who's going to be here next year? It's just so different. It's not fair to compare it. But I think that era of Indiana basketball was particularly exciting. But I'm going to rewind to I was a freshman in 75, 76, and I got a lottery ticket to go to the Final Four. And so I saw the last college undefeated basketball team, which, of course, was the Indiana Hoosiers of 76. That was my freshman year at IU. Later on, I was a graduate student in 81 and in 87 while I was working at the Parks Department. And we won again two more times. So I guess I need to go back to school again so we can win another championship. That seems to be the link to the last three Indiana basketball championships. But I think Indiana is always going to be one of the top jobs in the country. I know we've had a dry spell for a while since the 2002 team went to the final game. You know, I think that all the ingredients are here. And I think that the coaching staff that we have now, I think we may be able to get back to where all Hoosier fans want us to be. And that's kind of a regular Big Ten contender and a Final Four participant. That's really hard now to do. The days of being dominant every year, I don't think that's going to be very possible, but I know our fans want that, and I'd like to see us back return to that status too.
Well, Nick, I thank you very much for joining me. Look forward to the national softball tournaments coming up here July 30th and August the 1st. And of course, look forward to IU sports in full capacity this fall. I thank you very much for joining me.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's not forget the football Hoosiers are really coming off two great seasons, two January bowls, and they didn't have anybody watch them play last year either. Let's hope that we have fans that support the football team as it is on the upswing with Coach Allen. And let's look forward to all the IU 24 sports programs and the great success they've had. We've got a lot of swimmers and divers now on the Olympic team this year, among other athletes sprinkled around. So a lot of great things about IU athletics and sports in Bloomington to be happy about.
Thanks, Mick, and best of luck in your retirement. Congratulations.
Thanks, Nick.
My thanks to Mick Randhuizen for being my guest this week. The Indiana Pacers have named Rick Carlisle as their head coach. Carlisle coached the Pacers from 2003 to 2007 and took the Pacers to the NBA playoffs 3 out of 4 years. Carlisle replaces Nate Bjorkgren, who was fired after just one season as Pacers head coach. Thank you for joining us this evening, and thanks to our sponsors. On behalf of the entire team at the South Central Indiana News Network, my name is Nick Jenkinson. Join us throughout the week on social media and every Monday night right here for more Talkin' Sports.
was a production of the South Central Indiana News Network.